This seance was recorded on the 11th of January, 1967. Medium, there's the flint.
Yeah.
Oh, and the same to you, Mickey.
Well, that doesn't apply to me.
No, of course not.
Because I'm having them, yes.
No, I remember your telling
me. The material thing, ain't it?
Yes.
I mean, you go by the moon and the stars and the calendar and all that. Well, it doesn't affect us, you see.
No.
Anyway, I wish you a happy new year, and I hope it's a peaceful one.
Thank
and
you.
I hope you'll get yourself sorted out a bit.
Yes, thank you. Did you have a nice rest?
Well, yes, I did really. I certainly didn't come down to your side. I had a bit of a break, didn't I?
I'm so glad. Did you see your parents?
Oh, well, yes, I do see them, but I'm not really... Well, just as I'm not... don't misunderstand me, but there's not much there, you know what I mean? We're not sort of very close.
No, that does happen, you see.
That, with all due respect, they haven't progressed very far.
Oh, haven't
they? One tries to help them, you know. But you see, they're both sort of, I suppose I don't mean this unkindly, but they both were very selfish people.
Oh, well.
Yes, all my mum thought about was going to the public houses.
Oh.
You know, drinking and all that, you know.
Yes.
She was, stupid really, I think, don't you?
Yes.
But you don't go to pubs, do you?
No, it's not one of my faults.
I'm sure I don't see any harm in going to a pub and having a drink. But some people that just sit there all night and get drunk and drunk, don't they?
Yes.
No good at all. It doesn't do them any good physically, mentally or spiritually.
Yes.
And they meet the wrong people quite often, don't they?
They do.
You don't go to church now, do you?
No.
Why? I always think churches and pubs are very much alike.
Oh, do you?
Oh, dear.
Really?
Well, yes, in a kind of way.
Yes, I was going to say something, but I won't. Better be careful.
Well, perhaps I might as well explain what I mean.
Yes, do, Mickey. I love what you tell me.
It becomes a habit, you know.
Yes.
And people get drunk, don't they? And they get light-headed and rather stupid.
Well, sometimes circumstances.
Some people go to church, they get old, old-fashioned. I get ideas stuck in the nut, you know. Nothing's any good anymore. They leave, you know.
Yes.
They're narrow-minded and prejudiced and... They're not open to reason or truth, and they think that no one else is right, only them. They get very sort of, I don't know.
Yes.
I think it's a kind of dope, like drink.
Yes. Ha. do you remember any of your former incarnations, Mickey?
Oh, vaguely.
Vaguely.
I'm not very interested.
I know.
Do you want to know about incarnations?
Oh, I'm very interested, yes.
I can't see much point in it myself.
Can't you?
No, because, I mean, after all, it's done, ain't it? You've gone through it, you've experienced it, you've learned, or at least I hope you have, and you've assimilated all that one can hope to assimilate. It's played its part, it's had its purpose, and, well, what a good of I can't see much point in going back on it.
Oh, I see.
I mean, to me, it's going forward that matters, not going back.
Yes, oh, I do agree about that.
Because you're quite a case, really, aren't you?
Yes, you say so.
Well, in a way you are.
Yes.
You've changed a lot, of course you have.
Well, it would be wrong not to, wouldn't it?
But you were never as narrow-minded as some people, was you?
No. No.
Your husband was very prejudiced, really. When I say prejudiced, he had very strong fixed ideas about religion, didn't he?
Did he, yes.
Oh, you should know.
Well, perhaps not during the years I knew him.
Hello.
Hello, darling.
What was he saying about me?
Yes, your firm fixed views.
Well, I think they were firm in a sense, but it's true that I became a little more, shall I say, open-minded in the last years of my life, but I still clung to the Christian faith.
Yes, of course, dear, yes.
And I think the Christian faith, Christian knowledge, I prefer to call it, when it's properly understood and applied, is a wonderful thing. It is the thing, but I don't have a narrow conception of so many people do. I've changed my views in some ways, but the fundamental truth of Christianity came to...
Yes, naturally. Have you discovered any new link in your incarnations, dear?
Oh, yes. Well, I say I haven't. I suppose it was always there, but I couldn't recapture the memory of much of it. But there's no doubt about it that I had a incarnation at the time of Christ.
Oh, had you? That's interesting, dear.
And I was just an ordinary, simple, I suppose you'd call a peasant.
Yes.
Those ages at that time. Mm-hmm. And I was one of many, many thousands of people who witnessed the crucifixion.
Really?
And I must admit that you must remember, of course, the crucifixion and many other things are very common. And perhaps one didn't take it quite in the same way that one would now. I mean, one doesn't see it. You see, when you're born and bred and brought up in a certain condition of life, you become acclimatized and accept many things as normal and natural. I must agree now that it's appalling to think of, but there's no doubt about it that I was one of many who were puzzled, to say the least, at his birth of Christ.
Yes.
You see, a lot of people who were interested, in other words, they were impressed to a certain extent by Christ, were never convinced in his day and in his age that he was God. I mean, no one accepted the fact that he was what he claimed to be or what others claimed to be for him. In fact, I think it's more great to say that it wasn't so much what he claimed to be as what other people claimed that he was.
Yes, that's too true, dear.
And he was just an ordinary man, but a very enlightened man and an extraordinary man, and in some ways rather a man to be not feared, perhaps, but we didn't understand him. And when you don't understand a person, you perhaps build up certain prejudices and certain fears concerning them. And some of the things that he was able to achieve, indeed some people looked upon him as a sort of magician. And it's extraordinary how the effect he had on people in different ways.
Yes.
I was neither for nor against. I thought the whole business with the crucifixion was appalling in his case.
Yes. What nationality were you, dear?
Well,
an Arab, I suppose.
An Arab? No, I wasn't an Arab.
Weren't you?
I was a Jew.
Oh, a Jew, I see. Yes, of course. Yes.
But I was only an ordinary peasant, and inasmuch that I had no sort of place, I was a man who, I suppose in my religious beliefs, was as strict as any. I accepted that question, as we all did, more or less. And this Christ was a man whom, quite frankly, though we didn't understand him altogether because of certain things that were said and certain claims that were made by his disciples. In fact, the man himself, I think, was quite different to what often has been depicted. I only know that what I've been told and what I remember myself, that he was not only a man as other men are, but he was a man of striking appearance, certainly nothing like any of the pictures that one sees too commonly on earth, none of the sort of weak, sort of effeminate almost type of person.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Very rugged person indeed, and
yes,
dark and swarthy, and very Jewish in appearance, not a bit like the picture books.
No, of course
and
not.
And he was definitely, from my point of view, a man with strong religious convictions and a strong, powerful personality, and quite frankly, a man in some senses that I wouldn't say one feared, that would be stupid, one didn't fear the man, but there was something about him compelling, of course, but it was a strong personality, and one felt that he was, I think the whole point is that quite a lot of us thought that he was political as much as religious, and that's why I think some of the Jewish people followed him, because they thought he was going to not redeem them in a spiritual sense, but in a physical sense.
Yes.
Going to free them from the Roman yoke, you know.
Yes, of course.
You see, they looked upon him for a time as a leader, and I think it is purely on those lines that the Romans were afraid of him. They thought upon him as a man who was creating a lot of disturbance politically. I don't think if one moment that there was a religious aspect that worried them, they couldn't have cared tuppence about that. But the people clamoring around him, they thought this was going to be a political organization, and a powerful one at that, if it were allowed to continue. And I think that they were very glad to get rid of him.
Yes, I suppose I wasn't with you. you in that incarnation?
No.
Lord Darling was saying that he thinks that in time we may have more positive evidence of reincarnation. Do you think that's possible?
I think it's feasible. Of course, I think it's always going to be a very difficult thing to prove. For instance, I mean, one may, by communication like this, prove one's identity by references to past events and circumstances appertaining to oneself and one's family. One can prove one's survival after so-called death, but to prove one's living upon Earth centuries ago is much more difficult. I don't see how one can really prove that.
If only those books of yours weren't burnt down in the monastery, we might have been able to trace something.
That's feasible, yes.
Well, if you can think of any way in the future, darling, will you let me know?
Well, it's possible. I don't quite know how. I suppose if one can prove that certain manuscripts that one may have written, for instance, are still in existence and have never been discovered, and one can point to their discovery, that would be a proof, wouldn't it?
It would. That would be different.
But, I don't know. In my case, I can't. Well, no, there's no such thing.
Yeah.
There was a very big fire in the monastery where I was. A lot of things were destroyed.
Yes, that was a very interesting incarnation. I often read about it. Well, darling, could you tell me perhaps something more about your present, your home, your surroundings in more detail, your way of life, your day-to-day? I mean, of course, I know you haven't got days, but your... I would so like to have just a little more detail.
It's very important for people to realize that this world of ours is a very real world. It's not a sort of ethereal world or a wishy-washy affair. It's a solid world in which everything around and about us is solid and real, and our bodies, to all the kinds of purposes, are solid, as the conditions under which we live. There's nothing sort of ethereal in as much that we are sort of transparent or something like that. We are quite solid, our physical bodies, our bodies, spiritual bodies, call them what you will, are just as physical in a sense to us as yours are to you. And for that matter, so are our buildings, houses.
Yes.
I mean, these are not things which just appear because you think about them or because you want them. It's true that fundamentally everything is created by the very power of thought and the desire for things which are necessary. But these things don't just happen by thinking. You have to have artisans, you have to have people who are capable of building and designing. There are substances that are drawn from the matter of, I use the term earth, a matter of earth or condition of life in which we live. You see, we have a solidity. We have substances which we can use for construction. Buildings are built, architects design, and there are many styles according to the individual's outlook and idea of things. That's why in some spheres you will have architecture which is very typical, shall we say, of the Tudors or another. It will be very Grecian in appearance, and in fact the more highly evolved stages of existence, the buildings are possibly more of a Grecian type. There are vast edifices, vast halls, vast libraries in which are housed enormous quantities of books, for instance, although there again, as you progress, you do find that it's not necessary to read. For instance, one can read over here if you want to, but the point is that as you progress, you find it's not even in a sense necessary to read. You can recapture, if you can use the expression, in the atmosphere, all manner of thoughts. I mean, for instance, if an author on earth, like, say, Charles Dickens, who wrote many, many good books, those books have become such in themselves classics, and the characters in them, by the very infusion, you might say, not only of the author's personality and the author's wonderful imagination, but also the characters themselves have been given a form. I don't say that they are living creatures, they misunderstand me, but they are given a form of life because of the tremendous thought force that is poured into them by thousands upon millions of readers.
You tell me about that, darling. It's very interesting.
Force or power which enlivens them.
Yes.
For instance, you can visualize much. You see, when one reads here, or when one is acquainted with a work, whether it is music or whether it is a book, you give it a form of life of its own, of your own, in the sense you put something of yourself into it, as much as which you take something out of it. And it is possible to sit in a vast auditorium here and listen to great works by great composers, and yet not a musician is necessarily to be seen, although there are great orchestras on certain spheres or plans which play great orchestral works. It is feasible by the very power of the thought force of the individual composer of music to vibrate the atmosphere by their thought forces, and one can enter into that and be part of it and be conscious of it without, and listen to the sounds of it without the necessity of even an orchestra as such, of musicians and instruments.
Yes, that's very different from us, of course. What architectural type have you got for your house?
Well, mine is quite small. I suppose you'd call it more what you'd call a Georgian type of house.
Oh.
You seem disappointed.
Oh, not at all, no, dear. And what about the garden and things?
That is small but pleasant.
Yes.
And has many flowers. And there is a man who I have great regard for, who cares for the garden.
Oh,
who loves the garden, and whose chief delight is the garden.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And of course, there again, there isn't the same kind of work involved as there would be with a garden on earth.
No.
There aren't the seasons in the same sense, as you understand it, and flowers here bloom continuously, and you have all manner of flowers, and of course many that you never see on earth. But a person who takes care of a garden mustn't think that because there isn't the work or the effort, as you understand it in a material sense, that there's little or nothing to do. Things just don't grow entirely without effort. In other words, there is effort put into it by the mentality of the individual who loves and cares for it. And it's not a physical thing, but a mental thing. There are no weeds, although there are gardens that do have weeds, but these weeds are caused by the individuals concerned. For instance, one of the sure signs of an undeveloped soul here is the fact that they may live in an environment which is not necessarily unpleasant to them, which probably to them is quite pleasant, and yet they may have a garden that is full of weeds, but these weeds are really their thoughts, in a sense, which have never been evolved or developed on the right lines. A person who has not progressed very much will surround himself with not only a home, but he will be surrounded by perhaps a garden which is not beautiful, because they themselves are not beautiful. As you live and as you think, so you are, and so you create, and in a sense, you create a condition in a garden, for instance, where it is not as it might well be, and indeed many flowers, which are sometimes the thoughts and the individual striving, perhaps you might even say, to be beautiful. But because of certain lack of beauty in their nature, or certain defects, shall we say, there is a certain amount of weed and undergrowth, and there is a great deal which prevents the beauty that might exist. In other words, I think one of the surest indications of a person's character and nature is by the conditions under which they exist, and also particularly if they have a garden, by
yes.
Its conditional state.
Yes, naturally. Are you near the town, or are you right in the heart of the country?
Well, I am not in any town as such, but I suppose you could call it a kind of village. And yet, of course, there again we come back to this comparison business with earth. There are communities of souls. There was a time when I lived in a community building, a vast building, in which were many peoples, in which we all lived in a sort of communal state, which was very pleasant. But now I have this small but pleasant, what I suppose you would call is a sort of replica of a Regency or Georgian house. It's very attractive, very pleasant, and I'm sure you would like it.
Yes.
In fact, I know you do, because you've been here, but you don't remember anything about it, unfortunately, in your waking moments.
Yeah. Are you near, I suppose you're quite near a city, perhaps, if you live in a village?
Yes, but you see, I find all this very confusing and difficult.
Yes.
Because when we talk about villages, we talk about cities, we naturally think of villages and cities in England or elsewhere. And there are cities, of course, which are near Earth, and on planes near Earth, which are in some senses very similar. And indeed, you might say that they're very like. But as you progress and you enter into a different sphere of progression, you create and you are partly responsible for, although other people living there also, of course, have played their part. You see. But the point is that you're living in a community of which is a city, or can be, if you like, a city, but it's without many of the trappings, as you understand it, of a city life. For instance, there's no buses, there's no need for transport.
I mean, no.
We can transport ourselves from one
You are
place
lucky
to
in that, dear.
I thought. We have no inclement weather. The weather is permanently pleasant, and yet there is no sun as such. We are in light, and there is light, a beautiful light, but soft and pleasing, and there's little or no shadow. Now, you may think it's very difficult to appreciate a world in which there's no shadow. Indeed, some people would say that without shadow, you can't have any real beauty. You must have sort of shadow. But there's no shadow in the same sense that you understand the meaning of the term, because there's no sun rising and sinking and so on. But there is a kind of twilight condition, but it's, which does give us some, if you like, change. And that is a period of time when if we wish we can rest, and we sometimes do, but shadows as such do not exist. But that doesn't mean everything is stark.
No.
Brilliant. There is a softness and a beauty of the light here which is so pleasing and pleasant. But there's none of the darkness and none of the heaviness that you get in changes of climate and atmosphere, as you understand it.
Yes.
And yet one never tires of it, because it is always pleasing. And one feels the warmth, and yet there is no heat as such.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to explain how we live in a world which is in many ways so totally unlike yours, and in some respects, according to the plane on which you live, of course, is very like. You see, the planes, you know, the Earth, can be in our subject, no doubt, to the influences of the atmosphere around the Earth, the same as you are influenced by the atmosphere.
Yes.
So can we be, if we are on certain spheres near the Earth, and that beam on certain spheres, they do have definite night and day, because they become subject to the movement of the stars, etc. But these are spheres which are so close, really, to the Earth that they can even be compared with the Earth. And indeed, in some senses, they are even replicas of the Earth. And you have all nationalities living in communities under very ordinary conditions, not dissimilar to earthly ones. But these are spheres, as I say, near Earth. But when you move further out and you become more evolved and more, shall we say, spiritualized, then, of course, you yourself, making the contribution that you do to your environment, you find that you are in a changed environment. And then, of course, we come to this problem, knowing how to depict or describe it. Words become impossible.
Yes. Well, that's been very interesting, dear.
Are you coming again very soon?
Well, I hope to. I think Leslie has booked me about 2 weeks' time.
I look forward to it very much.
Yes.
I
wondered if you would tell me about, if you've met any of the naturalists. You were so fond of natural history.
Oh, yes, I have.
That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
You must always remember that as we have a human life, we have a nature life, and we have birds, many of the animals that you associate with life on your side. Of course, certain animals or certain forms of animal life no longer exist here, because they were in their infancy. They were, as it were, undeveloped.
Yes.
And of course, they do not have life in the same sense here. They cease to exist, put it like that. But been very close to humans, and have taken some part in human endeavor and human life, do exist. I mean, for instance, one's pets. But there again, it isn't just only a domesticated animal that exists by any means, because there are many forms of animal life which in their own fashion, in their own way, are quite developed. And they have great feeling, emotion, even when on earth, and great understanding. We sometimes do not credit the animal world with a great deal of intelligence, but it has.
Yes, yes, of course. What animals have you at present? I know you said you had two or three dogs.
Yes, and several cats, and parrots, birds.
And to have your parrot.
Yes, does that surprise you?
Yes.
Oh, you'd be surprised, I'm sure, because here they live in a natural state. And it's a great joy, because
sure
the plumage of the birds here is so wonderful.
Yes.
Of course, they can be an often hour on earth. And I do love colour.
Yes, you said why, well, you know that.
This is full of colour.
Yes.
Magnificent colour.
Yes.
And many colours of which you have no knowledge existed here.
Yes.
But sometime I must try and give you a more detailed description, but it is extremely difficult.
A description of colour, or do you mean of nature?
Of everything.
Yes, yes, I would like that very much, dear.
But I'd like to take this opportunity, I know it sounds very mundane, to wish you a very happy, very peaceful new year.
Thank you.
And I'm hoping it may be a year to some extent, although you may not particularly want it, yet I think it is. It will be good for you, for some change.
Yes, yes.
I think you will yet change your abode. You know.
Well, yes.
It will be good for
it
you.
Served its purpose.
Yes.
Yes.
But I'd like to see you in the slightly well, a more congenial condition.
Yes.
Good like that.
Yes.
Anyway, I shall help you.
Thank you, darling.
I'll speak to you again soon.
Yes.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Goodbye, darling.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Mickey.
Happy New Year, Auntie.
Same to you, Mickey, although
very
you don't have them.
Wasn't it today?
Very.
Are you thinking of moving again?
I'm a bedsitter, actually. Huh? Well, it's very, very confining. I have an awful feeling that it is unusual. Isn't that wonderful?
You're thinking of moving into what, a flat?
No, well, I don't know where.